Hey, I want to give you right from the start. The passage we're going to look at today is Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8. If you have your Bible with you, we're going to be in Luke chapter 8. If you don't have one, you can use the one, the row that you're in. That's our gift to you. Or you can follow along online at bcnazarene.org/gatherings. Today, we are in part 3 of our series, Unafraid. Has this series been helpful to you so far? Fantastic. Hey, I want to give this note. I don't need to give this to this group as much. I did say this to the 9 o'clock group. You guys are already there, but I want to remind you of what you're already doing, okay? And that often backfires with me, with my family. It's like the, hey, pick up your shoes. They're in my hand. I was like, I'm sorry. So I don't want this to backfire on me. But I want to explain a little bit of what we're attempting to do here on a Sunday morning, if this will make sense, is my natural tendency in terms of how I teach and how we prepare messages and stuff like that, is to take something confusing and obscure and make it like graspable, make it something that you can hold on to. And so like I was having a conversation with Doug Carter, who's part of our church one day, and he said, yeah, I was talking to someone about the way you give messages. I was like, okay. He said, and this is what we said. We said like, you kind of start on the mound and then halfway through the message, you're kind of running around right field somewhere. But you always end up making it back to home. Thanks, I guess. And that's my kind of like natural state within that. And this is why I've just thought for years that the issue for us in the terms of faith and in terms of following Jesus is we need to take false beliefs and replace them with correct beliefs. We need to take what is not appropriate, what should not be there, what should not fill our minds. We need to deconstruct those thoughts and reconstruct it with something that is healthy and helpful and full of faith. And so that's where I've kind of spent most of my life. But the problem is this, is coming across and seeing the conclusion within my own life that the issue for me is rarely a lack of knowledge and information. I do want to give you knowledge and information from the scripture and from the word, but the issue is rarely a lack of knowledge and information. The issue is usually a lack of motivation and a lack of momentum. So if I could say it like this, and I've used this illustration before, if I said, hey, we all as a church, we decide we're gonna get as healthy as we've ever been, and this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna sleep, we're gonna eat well, and we're gonna exercise. No one's taking notes. Point proven. Like I wouldn't go through that and you wouldn't be like, ah, that's it. I didn't see it coming. No, the issue is always motivation. The issue is always within that. And so this is what I'm going to continue to ask you to do, is to preach this message with me. As we're going through, to engage, to participate, to be a part of it, if something is true, to put your hands together. You can even say amen. Some of you, I understand personality and temperament. The best you can do is this. Okay, let me see. I know you can all at least do this. There we go. Some of you aren't even a part of that. I know when I do like the talk to your neighbor thing, there's some of you like 10 people. Oh my goodness, I'm going to find 15. Some of you like begrudgingly do it because the pastor asks you to. And some of you are just like, I'm sitting, ain't nobody telling me what to do in here. Okay? I get that. I understand it. I'm the same way. That's the funny thing about me being up here is my personality and temperament. If someone's like, hey, you should do this. I'm like, you can't tell me what to do. I'm not gonna do it. Like if we go to like the airport and we've gotta go through like the TSA check-in or like check-in ahead of time to get our tickets, like my wife will walk through every turnstile. If the turnstiles are there, she's walking through. I ain't walking around this. This is ridiculous. There's no one here. I'm not doing that, okay? So I get that, but I wanna explain to you what I'm attempting to do, okay? Is I want you to have momentum in your faith. I want you, as you engage the rest of your life in the things that you're in, to already have velocity behind it. And that happens through what we do here on Sunday morning. So if we say it like this, if you and I were to race each other, and let's say we're gonna run a 50-yard dash, and I'm not fast, okay? I'm not fast. But if you start standing still, and I get a running start, I'm going to win. Like, it doesn't matter who, I'm going to win that race. Because if I've already got velocity and momentum, it is easy for me to carry it through if you've got to get started. And what happens here every single week is I don't want you to hit those doors and then have to start running. I want you to already be moving. I don't want you to still always be wrestling with stuff. I want you to go, no, no, this is what God has called me to. This is where I'm going. And I want you to have velocity behind your faith and velocity behind your discipleship. Does that make sense? Do we understand what's happening with there? Okay, so when I ask you yet again, and I'll continue asking this, I won't give the whole long thing because we're just in the introduction. I've already lost 3 minutes, okay? And I don't have time for that every single week. I want to say, hey, I need you to preach this with me. Do we see what we're doing? Can I count on you for that? All right, there we go. I'm excited. All right, Luke chapter 8. Last week, as we've talked, third week on fear, we talked about the idea of fear and our past. And we talked about guilt and the way in which fear is present in our past. Today, this is what I want to do is I want to look at fear in our future. I want to look at worry and often anxiety as well. And I'll look at what does it look like for us to be locked into our current state and where we are right now because we're afraid to dream and imagine of what God has for us. And for some of us, what has happened is we have faith, we have belief, we have confidence, but we feel stuck. And today I want to show you maybe why you're stuck and the things that you can do to actually move into the future that God has for you. So Luke chapter 8, starting in verse 26, I need to give you this as a heads up, okay? It's gonna get weird. Alrighty, it's gonna get weird. And I can say that we've been here now for 2 years. When I was a pastor in Kentucky, and I would say it's gonna get weird. Actually, I couldn't say that because in Kentucky, people thought like, where are the snakes? Are the snakes coming out? But I don't have to say that here. There's no snakes, okay? Never, ever snakes. But this passage is something. Luke 8, verse 26, it says, so they, meaning Jesus and his disciples, arrived in the region of the Gerasenes across the lake from Galilee. As Jesus was climbing out of the boat, a man who was possessed by demons came out to meet him. For a long time, he had been homeless and naked, living in the tombs outside the town. As soon as he saw Jesus, he shrieked and fell down in front of him. And then he screamed, why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Please, I beg you, don't torture me. For Jesus had already commanded the evil spirit to come out of him. The spirit had often taken control of the man. Even when he was placed under guard and put in chains and shackles, he simply broke them and rushed out into the wilderness completely under the demon's power. Jesus demanded, what is your name? Legion, he replied, for he was filled with many demons. The demons kept begging Jesus not to send them into the bottomless pit. There happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby, and the demons begged Jesus to let them enter into the pigs. So Jesus gave them permission. A quick pause right there. I was just going over this passage and some of the notes with my wife Bethany before the message, and I got to this part of, then Jesus gave them permission, and she said, so that's how Peppa Pig came about. I said, you're right! So Jesus gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the entire herd plunged down the steep hillside into the lake and drowned. When the herdsmen saw it, they fled to the nearby town and the surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. People rushed out to see what had happened. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and they saw the man who had been freed from the demons. He was sitting at Jesus' feet, fully clothed and perfectly sane, and they were all afraid. Then those who had seen what had happened told the others how the demon-possessed man had been healed. And all the people in the region of the Gerasenes begged Jesus to go away and leave them alone, for a great wave of fear swept over them. So Jesus returned to the boat and left, crossing back to the other side of the lake. The man who had been freed from the demons begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him home saying, no, go back to your family and tell them everything God has done for you. So he went all through the town, proclaiming the things Jesus had done for him. And here's an important thing. So we find this account is in the book of Luke. So there's this guy named Luke who was impressed by God to write down these things that happened. Luke includes this. Not all the writers who we have their accounts of the life of Jesus include this. Okay, so we have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. This make up the part of our scriptures that we refer to as the Gospels because they tell the story of the life of Jesus. They don't all include this story, but Luke does. And it's important to understand, Luke did not like have an infatuation with pigs, okay? He's not a herdsman, he's a doctor. He's very precise. And so the language that he uses within his account of the life of Jesus is very precise. And so I want you to see right off the bat, because our minds, they always get quickly drawn to like, what's up with the pigs? This passage isn't about the pigs. It's not about the pigs. It's not like, well, why did Jesus send him into the pigs? Were there other pigs? Did he hate pigs? Like, what's going on? Like, are the pigs in heaven? Like, what's happening with them? We could spend forever on those questions. We're not going to jump into that today because that'll be a tangent that we'll never come back from, okay? But this passage is not about the pigs. This passage is about fear. And I know you hear that and that's not like some brilliant insight. Like, you think? This passage is about fear. I'd say so. This is like the weird plot to a B-rated horror movie, is it not? Like, if you actually like came in, like, what are we going to see? How about a man who'd been demon possessed since birth, who the demons leave him, go into pigs, and the pigs go crazy and jump in the lake and drown? I'm scared. Like, I'm a little scared. Like, not as scared as I was at The Ring or Blair Witch Project, but I'm a little scared. I'm not gonna lie about that. Like, that throws me off. And so this passage is about fear. But I want to show you, this is so important, precisely where the fear comes into this passage. Because it's not where you think it'd be. When we tell the account, we tell the weird stuff that happens, but where the fear takes place in this passage is so significant. So let me show you where it isn't. The fear does not come in here. There's no mention of fear when it talks about the man who was possessed by demons, homeless and naked, living in the tombs. Like, that's a little scary, right? Like, we gloss over that detail. That's like, right? If I said like, hey, don't mind the guy on the front lawn, hella funny weenie, people are gonna be here next week. Don't mind the guy who's naked and living by the house there. It's actually Robbie's house, but like, don't mind the guy who's living by Robbie's house, who's naked, who's wandering around. He's been there for years. You'd be like, no, not cool. Not cool, that's a problem. Like, I'm not okay with that. But there's no mention of fear here. There's also no mention of fear in this part of the passage, the fact that even when he was placed under guard and put in chains and shackles, he broke them and rushed out in the wilderness. That's scary, right? But there's no mention of fear. The detail that I'll admit I want in this passage is I want to know, how did they get the naked, demon-possessed man into chains and shackles to begin with? Like, who wants that job? That's like parents arguing back and forth, who's gonna change the dirty diaper that had a blowout? It's like, you, not you. Can you imagine those townspeople around? Like, I put the naked demon-possessed man in shackles last time. It's your turn. But there's no mention of fear. There's also no mention of fear here. Jesus demanded him, what is your name? Legion, he replied. The guy's right. Do this. Let's do this. Turn to your neighbor. Find someone around you. Look at them. Go ahead, do it now. Look at them. Don't look at me. I can see your faces. Turn to your neighbor. One of you look at the other one and say, what is your name? And the other person reply, Legion. We kind of did the thing that they do in The Lion King, where it's like, Mufasa. You can't say it without laughing. Mufasa, Mufasa, Mufasa. I need to stop, otherwise we'll be in Lion King the rest of the morning. Like, that's scary. Like, that's scary. I can remember this, like, when I was a kid, I got taught this story as a kid. Like, they went through this account in the life of Jesus as a kid, and they're, like, going through it, like, and then the demon-possessed, naked, homeless man living among the tombs came to Jesus and said, what's your name? And he replied, Legion. I'm like, I need to go see my mom. I'm not okay with this. I am not handling this all right. But there's no mention of fear. There's also no mention of fear here. When the demons enter the pigs and the pigs plunge down the steep hillside into the lake and drown. No mention of fear. Here's where the fear comes in. Verse 35. It says this. People rushed out to see what had happened. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and they saw the man who had been freed from the demons. He was sitting at Jesus' feet, fully clothed and perfectly sane. Terrifying, right? Fully clothed and perfectly sane. And they were all afraid. Now look at this. This is so important, okay? They were not scared of the demon-possessed man. They were scared of the sane man. They were not scared of the man who was naked and could break shackles. They were scared of the man who was sane, clothed, and sitting at the feet of Jesus. They were not scared of the man when he was demon-possessed. They were scared of the man when he was healthy, because they were used to the man who had been demon-possessed. They were familiar with the man who had been demon-possessed. They were comfortable with the man who had been. Who's that out on the outskirts? It's just the demon-possessed man who's naked and breaks shackles and lives among the tombs. It's fine. Let me show you inside. It's lovely in there. Let's go. Let's keep going. They were fine with that. But all of a sudden, when that man was healthy, they're terrified. I want to give you, I know this is a little bit later, I'm going to give you the title of the message today. I'm going to ask you to say it to your neighbor. The title of the message today is Security Blanket. Turn to the person around you and tell them Security Blanket. We have a little, today is Prop Sunday for me, okay? We have a little Security Blanket. We actually store all sorts of stuff in these fun boxes on the stage. I've got a box of Mike and Ike's over there just in case if I get a little hungry. So here we go. How many of you, out of curiosity, how many of you had a security blanket? Who had? Or a blanket, or a manky, or a cold manky, or a boo-boo, or a foo-foo? No one else had whatever title you called it. I don't really care. Who had, yeah, you had a, or just like the, or security bear, or security doll, or like, yeah, you had something. Yeah, we have these security blankets. Each of my kids has had something. Some of them have been attached to them longer than others. And I like it. This is just fun as a dad. Like they like all hold them differently. Like one of them just like kind of does their thing, their business. They're kind of getting ready to be a waiter or something. They carry their blanket with ease. Another one always hugs it all the time. Another one holds it with one hand and sucks their fingers. Like they all have kind of like their different posture with the blanket. They go through their different thing. And there's like actually, there's a purpose behind it. So the purpose behind the security blanket is to take someone who is stuck in a state of dependence and help move them to a state of independence. So like when your little kid like is attached to parents or someone else, then you give them an object. You give them a blanket or something. And the blanket or object has enabled them to say like, hey, you're no longer with this person who you're used to being with, but at least you have this guy with you, so you'll be okay. Does that make sense? It's meant to help someone move from a state of dependence to independence. But there's a problem with that. Is sometimes the thing that was meant to move us to a state of independence, we become dependent upon. And sometimes we hold on to the blankie a little too long. Sometimes the blankie gets a little dirty. I have my son, he does this. He does two things with his blankie. It's so disgusting. So for one, he just chews it all the time. He holds his blanket and he just always puts it in his mouth and he just chews it constantly. And so it's wet and it smells disgusting and it's gross and he just gnaws at his blankie. We feed him, okay? He's healthy. He just likes to chew the blanket. But then the other thing that he does is when he sleeps, he takes his blanket. I'm not gonna model this. I need to put this down, okay? Because I have a tendency to talk with my hands. He takes the blankie and he shoves it between his legs and he like wraps his legs around the blankie. And that's just how he sleeps. And so it's this like disgusting thing is because he's two and he's not potty trained, which hopefully we're done with soon, but I'm okay with right now. He's progressing just fine, thanks for asking. And so he'll take the blankie and he'll press it between his legs and sometimes he pees through his diaper and stuff like that. And so the blankie smells like urine. Like, oh, it's wet and it smells like urine. And then I do this moronic thing as a parent, and I don't understand why I do this, but I continue to do this, is I'll like pick up the blanket and it'll smell disgusting and it'll be all wet and I'll take it and then I'll think this, I'll go, is that saliva or is it urine? And I'll like give it to Bethany. Bethany, is this saliva or is it urine? I don't know, I can't tell. everything within there, I go, what difference does it make? Like, it's going in the wash either way. Like, why do we have to identify whether it's urine or not? I can't tell. And the reality is that sometimes the things that that keep us secure, we become a little too attached to, and they become pretty dirty, and they don't need to be there anymore. But it's actually more significant than that. Let me show you this in verse 37. It's not just the man, it's the townspeople. Verse 37, it says, and all the people in the region of the Gerasenes begged Jesus to go away and leave them alone, for a great wave of fear swept over them. A great wave of fear swept over them. Let me show it to you like this. This is gonna be a little awkward for me, okay? So give me just a second. We don't just hold our blanket. I said this is awkward. This is actually lovely. I was kidding. We do this. You see, when my kids aren't walking around, oh, this is fun. I need the mic. Well, when my kids aren't walking around, they do this. They wrap themselves in their blankie. For my oldest, it's a cold manky. That's what it is, cold manky. And they wrap themselves in it. You know what another term for a security blanket is? We have another term for it. It's called a comfort object. Comfort object. And the thing that it was meant to move you from a state of dependence to independence is now simply the thing that you're most comfortable with. But the problem, yet again, is sometimes the blanket gets dirty. Sometimes the blanket, the thing that was meant to move you to a state of independence, becomes the thing that you're dependent upon. And so we see in this example, we see the townspeople were so used to the man being demon-possessed that they are uncomfortable now that he's healthy. Have you ever tried to get healthy in a relationship that was unhealthy? Ever tried to do that? Or ever tried to approach conflict in a healthy way in an environment or a culture that was toxic and was full of dysfunction? It's terrible. And every single one of us in some way, we look at this and we think it's absurd. Why were they afraid when the man is healthy, sane, clothed, sitting at Jesus' feet, instead of when he's naked, breaking shackles and living among the tombs? But we all have these things in our own lives, our comfort objects. Here's one of mine. Let me give you mine. Then I'm going to go for some of yours, just so you're prepped for that. We took our kids to Disney recently. And we were doing like the character breakfast thing where the people come from table to table and you get the picture with them and they talk with you. And so we're sitting there and Prince Eric came to our table. And he came in and he stopped and he like talked to us for a second. He signed the girls' books. He got the picture and then he went to the next table. And I looked at Bethany and I said, that would be my nightmare. What? Going to random strangers, having 2-minute conversations of chit-chat, and then going to the next table of random strangers. Like, that would be my nightmare. It absolutely would. I'm not good at that. Like, some of you, you're amazing. You walk into a room full of strangers, and you just chat it up. I'm the opposite. Like, I'm the complete opposite of that. And so this is what I do, is I walk really fast. And when I walk really fast, it's really hard for me to do that. And so like you see me, I had someone in the church, I'm not gonna call him out by name, I think this is the funniest thing ever, is they said, oh, our pastor, he's great, but man, if you get him in the lobby, it is awkward. Yep. And so that's my comfort object, is I walk really fast, so I don't have to do the thing that makes me uncomfortable because I feel better when I'm not doing that. Some of us always have to be in a relationship. We don't know what it's like to not be in a relationship. Because if we're not in a relationship, who are we? What's our identity? And the relationship doesn't have to be healthy. It doesn't have to be meaningful. It doesn't have to be headed in the proper direction. But as long as it's there, we feel better. Some of us always have to be busy. And we equate our significance with our list of accomplishments. And if our task list isn't full of checks, then who are we and what do we matter? See, the reality is this, is every single one of us have a security blanket, have a comfort object, whether it's a physical object or not. It may be our values, it may be our behaviors, it may be our relationships. It may be a relationship that we've been in for years that is terribly unhealthy, but if we were to change our behaviors, we don't know what will happen within it. I'm gonna step way over the boundaries of where I probably should go, okay? And I know it, so I'm just gonna start there. And here's the thing, know this, I've got nothing to gain from this. I've got nothing to gain from giving this as an illustration, all righty? I've got everything to lose. And it's only my concern for you that I ask this. Sometimes I'll talk to couples and I'll talk to younger couples and people have a tendency to start getting married later and later in life, which that's not where I'm going, but I think this is a product of that. And sometimes I'll talk to people and couples and I'll talk to them and they'll talk about their finances and they'll talk about the idea that they have separate checking accounts. They have separate checking accounts. And it's always lean into that and I want to go, why? Why? And here's the deal, that may be you, and I don't want you to feel pressed, I don't want you to feel pressured. This is my concern for you coming out in this moment, is it usually come along the lines of like, well, I don't want him telling me what to spend my money on. I don't want her telling me what to spend my money on. And there's a brief part of me for a second that goes, wow, that sounds great. I don't want my wife telling me what to spend my money on. They got this. But here's my concern within that, is that we're called, especially when we're married, to build our lives together, that the two would become one. And I think one of the reasons behind that, and here's the deal, if that's where you are, I'm sure it's not you. I'm sure it's someone else. But I think one of the reasons why people do that is they want to give them a quick escape plan. And instead of fully investing and fully committing and fully investing in the two becoming one, we always want that quick out where we can go somewhere else and be safe within that. I say, you can't have two become one if you always have an escape plan. That's not gonna work. And so we wrap ourselves in our comfort. And it's not just the comfort that's at stake. One of the things that I think we often get wrong in the church, are you okay with me still sitting here? I've gotta tell you, I'm unbelievably comfortable. Like I was laughing about this as a comfort object. New message structure every week. I'm working a blanket into every sermon from here on out, okay? And I'm not washing this one either. I took it too far, I get that. Here's one of the things that I think is off. And I don't think it's a lie. We just don't tell the full truth. You may say that's a lie. It's the equivalent of like, if I ask my kids, what did you have to eat? I had a Skittle. Okay, where are the rest of the Skittles? I had all of the Skittles. So to say I had a Skittle is not a lie. But it is missing the whole truth. This is one of the things that I think we get off in church, is we'll tell people this, and I apologize if this has been told to you. We'll tell people, Jesus brings you peace. Follow Jesus and you'll have peace. Which is true, it's just missing part of it. Because the reality is this, Jesus brings peace eventually, not immediately. Because this is what's going to happen first, is you cannot take dysfunctional behaviors, unhealthy habits, and a toxic life and expect Jesus to walk in and go, oh yeah, wrap yourself in that blanket, you're fine. He's gonna ask you to take the comfort object off first. And that's gonna be difficult and painful and hard. And I feel so exposed right here without the blanket. So I get it why we do that. But that's what's gonna happen first, is he's gonna first say like, no, this can't be a part of your life. This can't be a part of your life. You were going this direction, you need to go that direction. And then we'll hear this from a sense and we'll go, no, Jesus told me he's gonna bring me peace. He may bring hardship first, but he's going to bring peace eventually. He's gonna bring peace eventually. And this is what I want for you this morning. I want you to pursue that peace. I want you to pursue what God has for you, but even more than just that, because there's something more significant happening in this passage. Luke chapter 8, verse 37. It says, and all the people in the region of the Gerasenes begged Jesus to go away and leave them alone, for a great wave of fear swept over them. So Jesus returned to the boat and left. Crossing back to the other side of the lake, and this is so important, the man who had been freed from the demons begged to go with him. But Jesus sent him home saying, no, go back to your family and tell them everything God has done for you. So he went all through the town proclaiming the great things Jesus had done for him. Let me show you. I told you this is Prop Sunday. I got one more prop. This is what this man finds in the moment. Oh, I love this. Anybody have one of these? See that guy? Yeah, this is good. There are two things in my childhood that made me very aware that my parents were not early adopters in terms of technology. One of them was we had cable. We got cable when I was a teenager, but we had a television that still had the turn dial. And ESPN and ESPN2 were on 30 and 31. This was before ESPN the Ocho, okay? There's 30 and 31. And our turn dial only went up to 25. That's the cruelest thing you can do to a teenage boy who loves sports. It's there, I just can't get it. And so that was the first thing. The second thing was this guy. We did not get a touch phone until my mom couldn't get customer service from a helpline that had the touch dial. Because she was on the phone one day and they're like, for assistance, press 5. Didn't do anything. Okay? But this is what I want you to see. Ready? This man, you'll see, this is so good, okay? This man, in this moment when Jesus talks to him, receives, you'll groan, okay? You're not gonna like it, you'll groan, receives his calling. Yeah, I know. I knew it was coming. It's fine. But let me explain this, okay? Because in church, we'll talk about this idea of calling. We'll talk about the significance of calling. This is what calling is. Calling is the intersection of your circumstances, your gifts, and God's will. That's what calling is. It's the intersection at the three of those. It's like, hey, this is where I'm placed. This is my unique position. This is my unique relationship. This is how I've been uniquely gifted. This is how I've been talented. And this is what God is doing in the world. When we talk about just the idea of your plan for your life, you're talking about the intersection of just your circumstances and just your gifts. You're not including God into it. And here's the great problem with that, especially as people of faith, is if you're only including those two parts, my circumstances and my gifts, then your life is only about you. Your story is only about you. When you go, no, how does this intersect with God's will? How does this intersect with what God is leading me to? Then all of a sudden, your story is not just about your life, but it's about what God has done throughout the history of humankind and continues to do and will continue to do past the time that you're gone. And so I just want to say that, all that to say this. You want calling. You want calling in your life. A couple years ago, I got the opportunity at a conference to hear Jeff Foxworthy speak. It's like, Jeff Foxworthy is gonna speak, and I'm like, all right, I'm about to get my redneck on. Let's go. Let's tell the jokes. And it was hard because he didn't tell a joke. And when you have a comedian speaking, you keep thinking he's gonna tell a joke. And so he's like, the other day I went into a restaurant. And I'm like, and a priest and a rabbi were in there, but there were never a priest and rabbi. He just was telling a story. And for 30 minutes, he spoke about serving in downtown Atlanta doing ministry to prison inmates. And he told about all his experiences and all the people that he met and how much it mattered to him. And then he ended with this thought. He says, once you've tasted purpose, once you've tasted meaning, you can never go back. Once you've tasted purpose and meaning in your life, you can never do anything else. And so that's calling. Calling is that all of a sudden I understand what God is doing. I understand what God is doing through me. It's not just my life that I'm living, but it's his will that I'm a part of. And look at what happens in this passage, back to 37. It says this, it says, and all the people of the region of the Gerasenes begged Jesus to go away and leave them alone. We'll come back to that. For a great wave of fear swept over them. So Jesus returned to the boat and left, crossing back to the other side. The man who had been freed from the demons begged to go with him. And so we have this idea, I want calling, I want what God's doing, I want significance, I want that meaning. But this is what Jesus does in the moment. It says, but Jesus sent him home. Jesus sends him back home. And we have this thought in our head that maybe meaning and significance takes place somewhere else. Maybe meaning and significance and purpose happens in another place. Maybe I'll be healthier there, but the reality is this, is that health is not a product of your circumstances. Health is a product of your character. And so you can't go somewhere else to be healthy because you take you with you. And so he sends him back home, and this is the calling that he gives him. It says, Jesus sent him back home, and I flipped over too many places. Jesus sent him back home saying, no, go back to your family and tell them everything God has done for you. And then he does that. He went home and all through the town proclaiming the great things Jesus has done for him. In this moment, this man who had been transformed receives his calling. All of a sudden, his life has significance, purpose, and meaning behind it, and it matters, and he's doing what he was created to do. Let me move around. Almost lost it. We're good. This is what I want you to see, okay? I want you to see this moment. I apologize, those of you who have sensitive ears. I know none of that was pleasant for you. We want this, right? Let me just make sure. Okay, we're on the same page. We want that, right? We want calling. We want to know that our lives count for something, that they're part of a bigger story. And so while we want this, the issue is, in this account, there's only one person who gets their calling. It's the man who is demon-possessed. It's the man who has been transformed. He's the only one in this whole picture who gets his calling. Who goes, no, go back home to your family. Go back home, tell them everything God has done for you. And he does exactly that. And there's a reason why only one person gets their calling. It's because everybody else is still holding on to this. And so Jesus comes in a moment and he says, no, you go. He heals him. The man is healthy. He's healthy, and everybody is afraid of what they have. And they go, no, he sent out those demons. What if Jesus messes up my stuff? What if Jesus takes what I have? And this is what I want you to see today. This is so important. Your calling will always come outside of your comfort. You cannot hold on to your comfort object or your comfort zone and find your calling. As long as you are firmly grasping this, what God's will and his plan for your life is, will always remain elusive to you and will always be outside your grasp. And this is what is so concerning to me, is I'll hear people in moments and they'll talk about this idea and they'll say things like, well, here's the deal. I just want whatever God has for me. I want to give my life to God. I want God to lead me in every single way. I want to be a spiritual leader of my family. And then it'll come back in something specific. And I'll be like, great, you want to be a spiritual leader. Go pray with your family. I can't do that. That's awkward. That's weird. What are you hanging on to? No, really, like I want God to use me. I want people to look back on my life and I want them to say like, oh yes, my life is better. I met Jesus because they were in my life. And then in the next moment, you'll feel pressed to go, oh, I need to go talk to them. And you'll say to God, I can't do that. That's so weird. I can't do that. That's so awkward. Let me tell you a hurdle that we faced as a church that we're still sometimes willing to face. Is volunteers and going, people who are willing to commit to what's happening. And this is one of the biggest struggles, especially when I first came here. As I first came here, I go, hey, we have two services. Could we get people to serve one and to attend another? Could we get them to serve with the kids or something else one and attend another? Could we get them to be a part of what God is doing, to be hope to our community so people can find Jesus, so parents can come and hear what God has for them, so kids can learn the hope that Jesus brings. Could we actually do that? And the thought was this, nah, people won't wake up that early. There's no way. Yes, God, send me wherever you'll lead me to go, but as long as I can hold on to my blanket, as long as I can stay within my comfort zone. And if you feel stuck in your faith, it's not about something that you have not yet pursued. It's about something that you're still holding on to. It's not about something that God hasn't made known to you. It's about something that you're grasping tightly to. And so this is what I want you to do right now. I want to invite you to stand. And I want to show you quickly this last piece of this passage, verse 28. It says this about the man. As soon as he saw Jesus, he shrieked and fell down in front of him. Then he screamed, why are you interfering with me? Jesus, Son of the Most High God, please, I beg you, don't torture me. For Jesus had already commanded the evil spirit to come out of him. While everyone else in the town was comfortable with the man who was unhealthy, Jesus had already commanded the dysfunction and demon to come out of him before he was near. While everyone else had become familiar with what was toxic, Jesus commanded it to go away in the moment. I want you to do this. Take your hand, hold it like this. For many of us, this is the posture in which we have lived our lives. This is mine. These people are mine. These things are mine. This job is mine. As long as your fist is closed and holding tightly to what you're comfortable with, God cannot put anything in it. And the fear is this: if I open it up, I may lose it all. If I open it up, I can't control it anymore. God is not leading you to a posture of control. He's leading you to a position of faith. Do not be concerned about what you lose grasp of. Be far more focused on what God can put into you and what he can lead you to. And so I invite you today, right now, in this moment, if that's you, let's create some momentum. Let's create some velocity in this. If that's you, and you're going, I've held on to the blanket for too long. Whether it's fearing lack of health, fearing the future, fearing something God has for me, or just being stuck in what I'm used to. I've held on to the blanket for too long. And I want calling. I want calling more. Maybe I've held my life with a closed fist and I want to open it up and I want to see what God has for me. I want to ask you right now, if that's you, would you raise your hand? You say, I want calling, I don't want comfort. I want meaning, I don't want mine. If that's you, raise your hand. Keep your hand raised. Let me pray for you right now in this moment. Father, my prayer, for those who say, that's what I want, that's what I desire today, is that you would give us a desire for you more than anything else. That our familiarity will be replaced by faith. That our comfort would be replaced by calling. That our significance would not be found in our circumstances, but in you and you alone. Teach us the path, teach us the ways. Guide our steps. And God, in the moments in which we feel like we're losing control, remind us over and over again that you have been faithful in the past and you will continue to be faithful in the future. Let us be defined as people of courage. Let us be defined not by our bad habits, not by our lack of health, but by our pursuit of the God who leads to wholeness and health and freedom and purpose. And so God, remind us in this moment, in every moment hereafter, that you are with us, that you go behind us, that you go before us, that you stand beside us every step of the way, that we do not walk this path, that we walk alone. And even when we feel exposed because the lack of our comfort that has been there, remind us that you are with us, that you guide us, that you have prepared a path before us. And all we have to do is have the courage and faith to walk into it and to walk towards you. And so God, let today be the day that we do not fear our future, but let today be the day in which we are defined by our faith in the living God. We pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. Amen.